The best reason to engage in a craft, any craft, is because you enjoy it. But what if you're lost in that numbing fog called depression and you can't enjoy anything? Kelly Lambert chairs the psychology department at Randolph-Macon College in Virginia and is the author of Lifting Depression. She told Anne Strangechamps that getting busy with your mind and both hands in some crafty way may do you as much good as popping Prozac.
It seems simplistic, and I know we get carried away with biomedical models, with neurotransmitters and neurochemicals, and I am a neuroscientist, so I get excited about that as well. But when you think about planning an activity, using all of that brain area and real estate to move your hands, and working with that, and seeing, and this is, I think, critical for depression, seeing an end result that makes your brain smile, so to speak, that is rewarding to you. Because I was able to show that the area of our brain that's involved in pleasure, it's called the nucleus accumbens, and it releases dopamine, a reward neurochemical, has close connections with an area of the brain that controls our body and then shoots toward the prefrontal cortex that's involved in decision-making and more executive skills. And so there are rich connections with movement and with the limbic emotional brain and with the thinking part of the brain. So it's very engaging, incredibly engaging, to plan something, to use both of our hands in tandem, to work with it, and to see that result. Even though that seems simplistic, and it might be gardening or knitting or doing some other craft, that is more engaging and complex than taking a single neurochemical in the form of a pill out of the context of our real life. Our brains we still have the same brain our ancestors did, and I tell my students when we talk about anxieties and phobias, a lot of people are more scared of a spider than they are a gun or a bomb because our brains haven't caught up. We're very predisposed to be scared of germs and insects. And even though things can be much more dangerous, we're not prepared to have that phobic kind of response to it. So we're still carrying around a brain that appreciates, you know, working with dirt and planting and hunting and preparing food. And we still have to respect that brain. I'm not saying that we don't need technology, but it might be helpful to use both hands in a crafty kind of ways and with things that you actually enjoy and where the movement is meaningful.
So as a neuroscientist, do you have any idea what's actually happening in the brain when, for instance, someone knits?
Yeah, I spent some time actually reading about the history of knitting, took some cups of coffee to get through that. But I found that about 100 years ago, physicians would prescribe knitting to women who were, quote, overwrought with anxiety. The physicians were picking up that it was calming them in some way. Knowing what I know about different behaviors and neurochemicals and emotional resilience and calm, today I would argue that, one, researchers have shown that repetitive movement, such as you would have with the knitting needles, increases serotonin, which is the very neurochemical that the antidepressants increase. And that has some calming effect. Also, if you're knitting something that you enjoy seeing, a scarf that you're going to give to someone, seeing that is rewarding. And you're thinking about and anticipating giving that as a gift or wearing that. Also, counting the stitches is a way to distract you from things that you may be worried about. So it kind of forces your thoughts away from thinking about that relationship or the job or the economy or stock market today. And again, you're using both hands in a coordinated kind of complex way that's engaging the brain. It's kind of like sit-ups or push-ups or some exercises for the brain. I talk about this as being kind of like mental vitamins.
We mentioned the neurotransmitters, serotonin, for instance, which you know, by now has made headlines.
Yes, it's a celebrity neurochemical.
Right, but so a lot of research on depression over the last few years has really focused on neurotransmitters, serotonin, but others as well. Your focus, though, seems like is less on one particular neurotransmitter and more on a whole circuit. And that sounds to me like it's kind of a different model of looking at depression.
Yes. What I did, I just went back to the drawing board to try to map out all the symptoms of depression. It's a very complex disorder, what we call depression. We have reduced pleasure. We're not happy like we usually are. We have more profound sadness, fatigue. Our sleep-wake cycles might be altered. A lot of different symptoms. So I started to look at, okay, which area of the brain is involved in reward and pleasure? Which area is involved in this fatigue and movement and worry and executive thinking and this something that I call the effort-driven reward circuit, where if we direct effort toward a goal and see a product, we're engaging the brain, and I think this is positive. When we don't do this and we're sitting in our chairs on our rear ends and not using our hands in very interesting ways, I think that it kind of dampens and numbs our brains, and we're less motivated to do things. So I started talking about this circuit. I'd learned from some neuroscientists who I respect, and they had told me one area of the brain is not sitting next to another one for no reason. They're in proximity because they're working as a circuit. And I think if we want to really respect the brain and approach these things in a respectful way, we have to appreciate this. So dopamine is involved in pleasure. Serotonin might be involved in this repetitive movement. Endorphins are involved when we exercise, which is another form of movement. We may or may not be using our hands with it. So there are a lot of neurochemicals that come together that could produce the state that we call depression. And given that, we can kind of get to it from a lot of different angles as well. So it's messier. It's not as clean as saying you're depressed because you have low levels of this neurotransmitter and you can take this pill, it will fix everything. The research just does not support that when you get into the scientific literature.
Mm. So you're suggesting that it would make more sense to look at a kind of multiple causation theory in a way.
Multifaceted that, kind of model.
Right, that it's not just serotonin, not just dopamine, and that perhaps it's not the serotonin that's making people feel better.
Exactly.
It's
that's an indirect downstream effect. So our efforts and the way we're engaging our brain. I tell my students, if you think about our ancestors who just hung out on the couch in the cave, I don't think these cave potatoes really made it. We had to keep going. We had to keep finding the resources and putting things together and building and creating. And that took our hand. Our brain needed to motivate us to do that. So I worry about when we are too inactive and things are too easy. Just at the press of a button, we have our food, we have all of these resources. I don't think it's too good for our brains.
Kelly Lambert is the author of Lifting Depression, a neuroscientist's approach to activating your brain's healing power. She talked with Anne Strange-Champs.